Blog Talk Radio.
Two things are true about students in urban American public schools. There are some students who do well and go on in life to become productive citizens, while there is a secondary population of students who go on to live lives that aren't so socially acceptable. While this secondary population of students, some 18% in Nashville, Davidson County, exhibit a number of behavioral issues and face extradition, it's no wonder why those students struggle to succeed academically. If they can't follow the simple rules of order, how are they expected to be focused enough to learn? I'm Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery, and I have recognized the needs of this population continually being unmet despite the best efforts of many dedicated educators over the years. As a result, my experience as a former special education teacher, youth counselor, and candidate for local and state offices, I've developed a school model to help address this troubled population. Dockery Christian Academy is a private, non-denominational Christian school whose primary focus is engaging parents as partners with educators and teachers in order to develop pro-social character for student learners. I'd love to share more information with you about this innovative education model. So please connect with me at www.dockeryacademy.org. That's D-O-C-K-E-R-Y, academy.org. Connect with us on Facebook at Dockery Christian Academy, or use the hashtag at 2020DCA. Thank you. I look forward to engaging you. Together we can make a difference for all of our children.
You're much more than the struggles that you go through. You're not defined by your pain, so let it go. You're not a victim.
Well, greetings, and welcome to another episode of Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. Grateful for everyone who may join us this evening, either in the podcast studio by calling 657-383-0944, just watching us on live stream tonight, or posting your question or comment, just being there in the distance. We're grateful for you, and we hope that you'd be able to gain something from it. I noticed looking at our stats that in South Korea, someone was paying attention to us from South Korea. Interesting, very interesting. But we're grateful, again, for each and every one of you that will join us on Talk Straight. This is, you're listening to it, and I'm your host. We hope that our co-host will be able to join us, Pastor Ricky Waller, who's been with us for the last, we're in our sixth year now, since we've been podcasting or blog, producing this particular show. Hopefully our regular callers will be able to call us as well. Anyone, you, if you're listening for the first time, please give me a call, 657-383-0944. We attempt to have instructive, honest, straightforward dialogue on a national basis. You know, we focus a lot on urban American issues, and we'll continue to do that. That doesn't mean we're not concerned about suburban or rural areas. If we're intellectually honest, we know that there's a challenge there, however, with urban neighborhoods and communities historically. Which brings us to our conversation tonight. And I want to talk a little bit about some things that I think we all can identify with. Education, something we hear a lot all the time. But let's focus on its meaning a little bit more in depth, okay? And further, I want to parlay a few words with this concept, education. It's simply a process involving teaching and learning. We've discussed this before on Talk Straight. But to go a little bit further, in order to be effective as a teacher and for a student to learn, there is a need for a partnership between two people that have direct and essential influence over the life, the character, and the development of their children. First, the parents, and then those who stand before them as a teacher. Parent is the first teacher, and particularly in a public school or another formal structure outside of the home. Then that other teacher becomes a secondary teacher. However, there's another important consideration that we have to look at in terms of education, this process of teaching and learning. And that is, what is it that we're teaching, particularly for urban American youth, relative to cultural identity, sense of purpose, right, and focus. This is a very, very, very important tool to empower them to become independent, productive citizens around the world, starting right here in America in their urban neighborhood, community on their block. So this is why we are having this conversation tonight. And our topic, the importance of education for urban youth. The importance of education for urban youth. We're speaking to you tonight on Tuesday, March 8th, 2022. Let me pause for a moment on a personal note to wish my beautiful wife of 26 and a half years now, happy birthday. It's her birthday today. All right. But we are speaking again from the topic, the importance of education for urban youth. All right. And I'd like for you to join us here, 657-383-0944. Let's get through our monologue. I do have a monologue tonight that goes with this subject matter. And I hope that you'll be able to follow us and gain something out of this experience. A few words that I want to parlay with this concept of education are heritage. I want to speak about how identity plugs in here. Personal capability, right? And then lastly, purpose. But I'll read a case study. This is one of the case studies I used in a book I self-published back in 2006. All right, and so we extracted this from it. We'll use this case study, and it will give us some guidance for our dialogue tonight on Talk Straight. All right, you call in, and we'll dialogue. I answer your questions best I can, and even take your listen to yours. All right. So Psalms the 78th chapter, and let's look at verses 6 and 7 for our purpose tonight. Verse 6 says in the King James Version, the generation to come might know them, even the children which shall be born, who should arise and declare them to their children, that they might set their hope in God. And not forget the works of God, but keep his commandments. There is a direction to a focus for teaching God's command to young people. And if you ask me, that ought to be at the forefront of your purpose for teaching and instruction. Teach young folk how to acknowledge the Creator of their lives. All right. All right. All right. All right. Let's talk now about education and heritage. Education, this process, teaching and learning. Somebody's going to teach something. Somebody's going to learn. So what do the teacher, or does the teacher teach, and what does the student learn? Heritage. It's essentially deals with property that is passed down to an heir. Okay? Something that is transmitted or acquired from a predecessor, somebody that went before you. It has to do with legacy, inheritance, something that's possessed as a result of one's natural situation, a birth in a certain circumstance, a birthright, if you will. Often we talk about heritage in terms of a pride, and particularly like African heritage. There's a sense of pride that comes with that. Although many people are distant, unfamiliar with really African heritage. But for many, and particularly those who have studied it, have learned it, they've gained a sense of pride in it. That's a good thing. Talk about heritage, we have often think about a rich social experience. Yeah. Traditions such as dance and clothing and even folklore. Myths that are passed down within this certain social context. You see, all this has to do with history, really. Positive accomplishments that are associated with a specific ethnic group or ethnocentric focus that leads to, again, that pride. That's what we talk about when we talk about heritage. We can say that about the United States of America. That would be fine. But just like our Irish and our Jewish and our Greek and Italian brothers and sisters, they are able to turn to a specific ethnocentric cultural trait and find joy in that heritage. But somebody has to teach it to them. When we're talking about educating urban youth, what are we teaching them about their heritage? Are you with me? Let's look at what identity, how it correlates to education. Now, let me tell you something. These things that I'm talking about are not things that the public school teacher is charged to do. These lessons start at home. They ought to. And that's where that is the best and most appropriate place for them to start. They can be added on to or supported in other settings, such as church or community center or a public school. But it starts at home. Your parents are your first teachers in an ideal situation. Yes, I hear people saying everybody don't have big parents for a lot of different reasons. Who don't know that? No one knows that better than I have. In fact, I've committed a quarter century focusing on that in my occupational life. So I'm very much familiar with what you're talking about there. However, that does not excuse what the ideal and intended purpose, you see, for education and for those who are the primary voices of influence, primary teachers for their children. We're never going to get rid of that. That'll always be important. And I'll certainly emphasize that talking straight. Identity. Basically, it's a condition or a character. That identifies who an individual is. Now, this is key when you walk on urban streets. I've experienced this myself. Some people don't believe they should have to have an ID. Why I got to carry an ID with me? Because identification helps separate you from any other sundry character and identify you with a particular purpose. See? Certain qualities that distinguish you from others. You're not a criminal. Don't behave, dress, or act like a criminal. Come on, somebody. We're talking straight tonight. Your identity is linked to a belief system that you have. That's what drives your behavior. your historical context. You understand? The sense of self-providing. That's what it does for you. It allows you to have a sameness with others within a certain community, or there's continuity, if you will, in how you represent yourself. You don't have to figure out who you are. You know that. And others can see it in you, and it's consistent with you. You understand what I'm saying? And oftentimes, you can identify with other people who share the same characteristics, social, emotional characteristics with you, ethnic or heritage characteristics with you. That's what makes you the same. Identity. Who's teaching that to our babies? Too many of them have learned to identify with destructive mentalities and behaviors that lead to their early demise, sadly enough. And that's where we have an issue. What we have to do is to make sure that we are telling our young people, yes, you have a right to be respected, but we have a responsibility that comes with that right. And that responsibility is to make sure that you're consistent with your identification, with who you are. Don't let nobody define you. Define yourself, but know how to define yourself based on what? Your natural heritage, your persona. Then let's look at personal capability as it relates to education and teaching and instruction. I mentioned to you earlier that this instruction starts early at home, before you even leave the house. You understand what I'm saying? It is parents' responsibility and duty, the father, the mother's duty, to make sure that children have this basis of instruction, this content material that's not just being told to them, but being modeled in their lives. I wish I had a witness. I wish I had a witness. Personal capability has to do with a consciousness about your own talent, your skill set, your proficiency in a certain thing or area. See, when you know you're good, you ain't got to worry about asking nobody, am I good enough? Because you know you're good enough. Proven that. And what has happened is, in my book that I, Fatherly Instruction, I describe how one of the lessons that is necessary is to allow young boys in particular have age-appropriate challenges where they learn how to master certain things. And they come to the conclusion that I've mastered this. It's very similar to the African concept of taking a young boy out to the wilderness and allowing him to conquer nature. And in effect, he's learning how to even conquer himself. You see, you know that you can do this. There's no question about it. No mental reservation or hesitation in your mind whatsoever. You know that you can. Call, I'm coming to you. Finish up our monologue here. And we'll open up the phone line, 657-383-0944. Listen to Talk Straight. And we're getting through this conversation about education here. Then we're going to talk about purpose, lastly. And I'll read this case study that we promised to share with you. Purpose. What are we teaching young people about purpose? Purpose provides a reason for you to get up every day. Wash your face, brush your teeth, comb your head, put clothes on. Go outside the door. Where are you going when you go outside the door? Who you hooking up with? What's on the agenda? Purpose, purpose, purpose. This is something that allows you to be intentional about your daily activity. Look. I'm going to tell you how you stay out of trouble. I'm going to tell you how you stay out of trouble. When you have a plan for what you do, who you do it with, and where you go every day, that'll keep you behind out of trouble. Because you already know some things, some places, some people are not on the agenda. Help me, Holy Ghost. Yeah. Listen. Understand something, beloved. Understand something. It is not by happenstance that people who are successful in life get there. But it is because they are purposeful. They are intentional. Every day, they have a goal that they're working toward. What drives that? Knowing that they have confidence in their own personal capability. They've identified themselves as being worthy of the prize, of the goal, of the end, because this is linked to a certain pride that comes with their heritage. It's been passed down to them, if by nobody else, by their parents. The parents tell them about their grandparents, and tell them about their great-grandparents, and so forth and so on. All right? Let me get through this last little case study here, and we open up our phone line. 657-383-0944 is the number to call. Bobby, and this is a fake name, even though these are individuals that over the years I've worked with, and many of them, their stories were part of my self-published book back in 2006. And it was the basis for the workbook you hear me talk about, instructions, fatherly instructions for young males. Bobby is an 18-year-old. Since age 13, he has been in and out of juvenile detention. Bobby has murdered 3 people. Due to his being a minor, the one person he was charged with murdering at 15, he's currently serving adjudication in a juvenile detention until he turns 21. Bobby told his case manager that as a little boy, he was encouraged to kill his first victim for an adult who did not want to wind up going to jail for the crime. As a reward, this reckless individual gave Bobby the nickname Lil' Killer, made him feel good about himself. And that was a sense of identity for him, you see. And since then, Bobby has identified himself by this flamboyant title given to him by this reckless, demoralized individual who served as a role model for him. Now, we can ask a lot of questions about what has happened and what's going on here, right? But we're going to open up the phone lines here. 657-383-0944. And hopefully we can pull some out of this. But we're talking from the topic, the importance of education for urban youth. What is it that we're teaching? Education is simply a process that involves teaching and learning. But the real question is, what is it that we're teaching them? We go to the phone lines now. And our first call online is area code 323, last 4 digits.
It's
welcome.
My name is Joe.
My brother. Are you there?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. I can hear you.
Welcome. How are you doing?
Great. Thank you for joining us. You have the floor.
Now, I saw the headline of your show. And I know that in the Jewish community, in the Asian community, education, formal education, which I don't know if you're touching upon that, but you're talking about perhaps empirical education, one teaching oneself, but formal education is emphasized.
Okay.
What I'd like to know is it emphasized in the Black community or is it not?
You asking me that question?
Yeah.
Okay. My observation over the years is that it is not taught and not focused on enough. I wouldn't say that in all of the Black community entirety. However, in far too many areas, it's evident to me as an educator myself, as a pastor, and as one who dedicated his life over the last 30 years to this particular cause, that it's not enough. That's my response.
Okay, well, that seems to be a a sensible response. It seems to be that way to my observations as well. Now, my question is, there have been people, I think a guy's name is Dr. Harry Edwards, somebody from a few years ago. I believe that's his name. And he was talking about how, you know, a lot of black youth want to become rappers and athletes and, you know, and musicians, which is fine. Mm-hmm. But he was talking about how the odds were against most people, not just blacks, but most people, into becoming a superstar, which seems to make sense to me. If a person goes to gets the right emphasis from their parents to do well in school, they may not become a rapper or a a musician or an athlete, but if they go to college, 4 years of college, to become successful in some corporate endeavor, or maybe in a blue collar endeavor, it seems that one can become successful more easily doing that than trying to pursue the goal of going to Hollywood or becoming a musician. So why, in my opinion, that should be taught in more families to let the parents be aware of the importance of education and to pass that down to their children so that they can become successful.
I would agree with you 100%. Go ahead. You're going to ask.
No, I just finished.
No, I appreciate that, and I agree with you. I accept your premise and agree with that 100%. There are some factors, though, that come to bear that really, and when we talk about this, the intent is not to shame or make anybody feel bad, but to understand how we got to this point, why it is that in certain areas, you can just about predict. In fact, the Bureau of Vital Statistics are able to determine from the zip code that you're born in what your life is likely going to the outcomes are going to be when you turn 18. In fact, they build prison beds based on that data, right? And sadly enough, for too many, they're spot on. We can return that around. We can reverse it. I'm convinced of that. But let me go to a couple other callers we got here. We got some Alabama's joining us tonight. Welcome, Thelma, to the conversation. We're talking about the importance
of
education. How you
doing? I'm still here in church and Christianity.
Okay.
You still want to hang on to Peter and Paul.
Hold on,
Catholic Church.
Hold on, big brother. Let me tell you what we're talking about tonight. Our topic is not anything about Christianity or church. It's about the importance of education for urban youth. Would you like to speak on it? Hold on 1 second. Let me recognize that. Hold on, big brother. 1 second. I'm coming to you. I just want to recognize another caller on the line, and then I'll give you the floor. 3072 out of Jacksonville, Florida. Go ahead, my friend. Selma, Alabama. Go right ahead.
No, I was saying, Mr. Dockery, if you educate the children to the truth, you're messing my child up. Why are you doing my child like he?
Okay.
You telling my child a lie. You got him off in the church and Christianity. That's Peter and Paul.
Okay.
You all seen what his mama did the other night to Mr. Dockery. He was really sad. And I got up and walked out of the house.
Okay.
It is sad how our sisters are being educated by these so-called ministers that's involved in masonry that's miseducating our community and misinforming our children.
Okay. I hear what you're saying. I don't know if you heard my monologue, but in the beginning, I start by saying there are certain qualitative lessons that has to be taught by fathers and mothers as the primary voice in children's lives. So I'm not suggesting that these lessons start outside in the public venue at a public school or even at a church, but they start at home first.
At home.
And if for any reason the caller from my friend here from 6606 beautifully pointed out the fact that there are a lot of misguided purpose for young people. unfortunately. And there's a historical context to that, right? And the truth of the matter is, culturally, if we could speak on those terms, if we want to look at Afrocentric heritage, that requires grown people to be together and on point and to handle their business to make sure their children not only are being told, but having the expected behavior modeled for them at home first. So let me go to Jacksonville first and welcome her into the conversation. Jacksonville, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. Again, we're
Thank
talking
you so
from
much
the
for having me.
Yes, ma'am. Importance of education for urban youth. Question or comment thus far?
Well, I was just agreeing partly with the other caller about he was saying your first, I guess, inspiration or teaching to your child should be first to be educated. And then secondly, you know, if you have dreams or aspirations, like you said, to try to be some kind of big superstar or something, not just rap, but any kind of big superstar thing, famous or whatever, you know, that should be a second. But the first thing you should do is to educate yourself and then take it from there.
Well, I appreciate that. And Don, this is what I was saying in the monologue, that there are four considerations in educating your children, particularly in terms of instilling heritage, and that is telling them what their heritage is. And I'm not leaving that just to mama. Mama should do it. Mama could do it, 6606. But I'm suggesting that brothers must do whatever it takes to make sure you are in front of your children, teaching them about heritage, teaching them about identity, teaching them about their personal capabilities, and teaching them about a sense of purpose for getting up in the morning. I'll reiterate what I said earlier. Washing your face, brushing your teeth, combing your head, putting on some clean clothes to walk outside and to determine that you're going to go somewhere. And when you come back at the end of the day, you would have done something productive that's going to lead toward a productive life. Let me go to you, 6606. Some of the things
My name is Joe. I happen to agree with him. It is the parents' responsibility because the parents created that particular offspring. They have the greatest responsibility in the world to take care of their child. They should provide that child with a feeling of safety and security and love. And as a result of that, they should also teach the child how to be self-respecting and how to grow up feeling safe and to navigate this world as a confident human being, a responsible human being. When the parents, the fathers and the mothers, lay down on their job, it's no wonder why their children turn out to be what and who they are.
Right.
Now, I believe that when parents are strong, you can be practically in a crime-infested neighborhood. Remember those zip codes you were talking about, or the area codes?
Yes, sir.
The zip codes.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, that. You can overcome that if you have strong parents.
Right. Absolutely. And my friend, this is one of the things that I would strongly encourage people to understand, that while there are certain things you can't control, there are things you can control. And I think about Ben Carson's mother.
That's what I
Ben Carson's mother was, hold on one second, Don, was uneducated. In fact, she couldn't read, she couldn't write, or do math. But she had the value of education for both of her boys in Detroit. And you know what she did? She bluffed them. She bluffed them. She told them that y'all got to come back here every day after school and tell me what your lesson was. Read to me what's in the book and what you did for homework. And made them explain to her why the answers to the question in their homework was right. You know, Carson was a renowned neurosurgeon, retired now.
Right.
You understand what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Now, this woman couldn't read or write herself, but what she did know is that if I push these boys, They'll make their way out the ghetto. And bless God, they did. It's a powerful story. I'm simply saying. You don't have to be a PhD or a scholar to take small measures to make sure you're what they need. Were you trying to say something, 72?
I was just in agreement and touched by that, by Carson's story. That's truly beautiful.
Yeah. He wrote a book entitled Gifted Hands, and there was a read that I insisted my children read. Both of them are very familiar with it. And these are some of the type of motivational stories, or not just stories, but case studies. I read a case study earlier about a 13-year-old, a 15-year-old now, who, well, so that was some years ago in 2006. He was shaped by individuals who he looked to as a role model, and they only manipulated and exploited him for their own gain to keep themselves out of jail. We have that going on right now all across America. For young, how is it that 11-year-old, 6606, gets arrested or carjacked somebody? They don't even know how to urinate straight. Help me with that, 66.
because of bad influences. The parents aren't taking over the character of the child. They're not making sure the child comes home from school, does the homework, and stays inside until the homework is done, and then monitors the child's whereabouts if the child goes outside. And if you have to, you leave the neighborhood to go to a better one. Again, the children are your greatest responsibility. If you can't do it, don't have children.
You're right.
Yeah. Now, how do we say that? You are absolutely right. But, well, ain't no way to say it, but the truth sometimes hurts. I was going to say, how do you say that to someone that needs to know that, my friend, in a way that is supportive and they don't, you know, take it offensive? Is that possible, or do you just have to lay it there just like that?
Yeah.
Well, you should do it diplomatically, of course.
Okay.
If you have some sort of influence over, you know, over the over the mother and the father, or the potential mothers and fathers, you have to let them know. Look, I heard of, I remember talking to one woman who had a young boy who wanted to get married. I think the boy was around 16. So she sits down with the boy and she says to him, "These are your responsibilities, and these are the costs of what happens in your household when you're married." So she outlines it, and that persuaded him to not get married, because you're going to have,
come from Chicago,
you know, you're going to have a lot of costs. A lot of expenses.
I apologize. We catch
you know,
callers' background conversation. Now, go ahead. I apologize. Go ahead.
Yeah, I
hear what you're saying. She talked him out of it when he realized that it wasn't something to play with, huh?
Yeah, because most people get married based on hopes and dreams and Disneyland. When you when you actually realize that marriage takes work. And that has to come from the parents, because we as children, we don't know anything. We think we do when we're teenagers, but the parents, they may not even know a lot either, but you try. And you have to teach the child how to be strong in a world which is always going to give you a lot of obstacles, regardless of whether you're black or white or Chinese or Hispanic.
Sure.
And that's why I said before, it's easier to go to college after 4 years and look for a job than it is to try to become a superstar. Now, once you get the education, you can always try to become a superstar after that, but at least learn to read and write and to interact with your colleagues and your peers. Take a look at some of the people who are in the NBA or the NFL, multimillionaires. But what happens when they get out of, when they stop becoming star athletes? Something like 50% of them lose their fortunes because they don't know how to handle money.
Well, I'm gonna go to 72 in a second. I saw a story a few years ago about he played for the Chicago Bulls, but after his career washed up, he he went to college, but he didn't learn nothing. And he dropped out of that, right? Went to the pros. I'm trying to think of this brother's name. He had a speech impediment and couldn't even talk right. They wouldn't even interview him because of his inability to communicate, right? And to make a long story short, he was so frustrated with the public school systems as well as the NBA because it seemed like he was just used. And when he was no more useful to them, they dropped him like a bad habit. And there he was. I understand he was working job to job and he was busting dishes. Ain't nothing wrong with that. I washed dishes. I was a head pot washer one time in my life. At a restaurant, I was a head pot washer, so ain't nothing wrong with that. But he was busting studs in a restaurant before. But go ahead, you were gonna say something. Mm-hmm. What were you gonna say?
No, I was just listening. But okay, if you're gonna let me cut in, yeah. And I was also thinking that there's the case of a guy who got convicted wrongly of a crime, spent something like 16 years in jail, got out, become a lawyer. Right? He became a lawyer.
Right, right.
And he put behind bars the people who framed him.
Wow.
So a lot of it.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, I wish I remembered the name of the guy, and I'm hoping he writes a book because I like to read it myself. But it does show what ambition can do. If you're ambitious and if you don't let anything stand in your way, you can become what to a great degree anyway. What it is that you aspire to. Now, maybe you want to aspire to become a rock and roll musician, a rap musician, a poet, an actor. Try to be the best you can and try to be, better than average, better than mediocre. Do according to your talent. But at the same time, the formal education allows people to know how to communicate with others, how to communicate your feelings. And that, to me, is kind of important.
Absolutely. 3072, you're a mom, you've raised your children and so forth and so on. It's a delicate thing when you're trying to tell people that here's a best practice, right? That's not to suggest that you know better than them or you are in a position to dictate to them what's best for them. However, you had some experience. Do you see enough of the case where I hear a lot about empowering young women to be entrepreneurs and things of that nature, but I don't hear a whole lot about encouraging motherhood and teaching young ladies who are prone to, most likely to have children, about these very important characteristics. What do you think about that, 72?
I think certainly we don't hear enough about parenting, I think, in general, period, especially less today than back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
It's like everybody's rushing off to their careers and their jobs and children are being left in child care. I read a story just yesterday about a 5-year-old knocking a teacher unconscious.
What?
A 5-year-old, yes. And the child was being removed from the classroom because he was having a tantrum and throwing chairs and, and I'm seeing more and more of this. But I think that that's what's missing today, again, is we're talking about teaching and bringing up children and the fathers in the home and family and, all of those things. They play a part, and I think it's showing because it's missing now. It's so much going on with the children and the youth in negative ways because nobody's supporting, like you said, family, fatherhood, how to teach a mom, how to teach their children, or how to teach a husband and wife, how, what values they should be instilling in, because everybody's so busy. So I think, people just need to.
Great point.
It's like
great
the man said, if you're going to have children, you need to be up for having them and maybe decide if you want children or if you want to pursue your career, because children are just being neglected, I think. Maybe not intentionally, but they are being neglected, and it's showing.
Yeah. By and large. Let me go to Selma here for a second. Selma, you've been following our conversation. Would you like to come in on that in either one of those points in terms of the importance of parents taking control and the apparent neglect that seems to be taking place when it comes to rearing children? Selma, you got the floor. Are you there?
Yes, sir. I'm still with you. I'm listening. Like I said, Mr. Doctor, you know I'm 62 years old. I'm tired of the programming, especially by those that one that wants to be leaders. You understand? I'm just sick of it. It's sad.
Okay.
Even when Ms. Harris came down here to Selma, Selma still tore up. It's sad.
Mm-hmm.
It's real sad. Ms. Doctor, it's real sad.
I hate it.
You know, I got, like I said, I got a 13-year-old son. And what I experienced the other night from Charlene, it was really shocking. So I'm going to tell you again, I got to walk out. Because it's sad. Your mom and daddy can't read. The pastor been caught going to bed with another man. Come on now. You don't win your gamut with that. So it's like, you know, it's like some brothers come teach some truth. And once they teach you that truth and you understand that truth, just like a brother came to me and just told me, hey, man, hey, Don, the Sabbath is on a Saturday. And it clicked because more science. He said, man left the flesh on a Friday, came into the flesh on a Friday.
Okay.
So you go to another level, but long you keep staying at that, you messing up the babies. You messing up the community. And right now, Mr. Doctor, homosexuality is so bad in Selma. It is real sad. It's real sad.
Okay.
It's real, real sad. It's in the city hall. It's in the grocery stores. And then the guys that are that way, they try to take up for European businesses. Come on now.
Well, now, it sounds like that yet another barrier to the teaching of these character traits that we're talking about right now. Because anything that is antithetical to a strong, viable family that includes a father's voice, a mother's voice in the ears, the hearts and minds of their children is going to be problematic. Now, there are people today who have organizational purposes that are geared toward the total opposite of that. One of the things I would ask anybody who's running for office who say they want to be a leader, and that is, how much on a scale from 0 to 10, 10 being the most and 0 the least, just how much do you value the institution of family in the life of a child? And if they can't answer that right, you know what I'm ready to say to them, 66? Go sit down somewhere.
I'd like to ask a question.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Probably a sociological type of question. What has happened to the black community?
Okay.
Because I know in the 1920s, the 30s, and the 40s, when blacks were by themselves, their communities were flourishing. They didn't have the out of wedlock rate that they have today, something like maybe 5%. They had very low unemployment rates. The median income probably was higher back then. Divorces were fewer. All of a sudden, from the 50s, or let's say from the 60s onward, it seems as though the black community has been disintegrated.
Right.
So I want to know from a sociological perspective, what has happened?
I'm ready for you. I'm ready for you. One of my references that I use in my writing is the works of Andrew Billingsley, co-authored by a lady by the name of Carol McAdoo. They wrote a book entitled Black Families in America, and they did a beautiful job of explaining just what you asked the question about sociology. And in it, they pointed out the fact that certain policies from our federal government related to welfare and food stamp program and social housing were geared toward breaking down
the
very character and fabric of the Afro-American family. And when those families depended on themselves to provide certain things, they did fine. But when they relied on the government, it went And then they talked about how in the 70s this movement toward feminism basically became a barrier to being able to help families. A sociologist by the name of he was a congressman. Oh boy, I'm trying to call his name. His name will come to me. It will in just a minute. But basically, he wrote a piece to Congress describing how to help the black family in 1965. And it appears.
Oh, you're talking about Moynihan.
Moynihan, Patrick Daniel Moynihan. That's right. Thank you.
Right.
And and it appears as though what Congress did was the exact opposite to maintain that stronghold sociologically, economically. Mm-hmm. On black families. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Would you like to respond to that?
Well, I don't think that the government's responsible. I've heard that argument before where it was supposed to be a requirement that if a single mother was to receive money from the federal government, that she couldn't have a man in the house.
Correct.
Well, okay. But you have to ask yourself, then why is the woman in such a dire straits to begin with, and to have money coming from the federal government, which is free, that's nice. That's a nice benefit. Okay, I can understand to a degree the feminist movement because it does play on your mind. But to say that the government by itself is an evil institution, I can get into that for a couple of hours. But the people.
One second, Don. I'm coming right to you. I don't mean to suggest that, my friend, that it's solely the government. There were some things the government did that were contrary to the best interest. I wholly believe that, and I believe that there's evidence of that. However, there is an opportunity for people to become less dependent on the government's control and more independent for themselves in 2022.
That's right. There's a choice. Yeah, it's a choice to be made.
If you don't mind, Don was trying to, Don, go ahead. You were trying to weigh in there, my friend.
I was listening to Mark today. Mark's younger than me, and he said to me, Don, when they brought in Section 8, the women run around talking about that's their house. How is it your house and you get money from the government?
Okay. Well.
See, and like you said, she listened to Moynihan. Moynihan's a homosexual. Most of them guys up there in Washington, in a Greek-Roman society, that's what they do. So how you going to tell a brother that ain't that way how to run his house? Or
well,
tell
Moynihan's
his wife
dead.
How to run their house?
Yeah, he's dead right now. But
yeah, we know he's dead. But guess what, Mr. Dockery? That government that y'all talking we got set up is a Greek-Roman style government.
Okay, I get
Greek
what you're
Roman
saying.
Style
I think,
government. And guess what? I'm not with that.
I see where you're coming from. You and I, you in Selma, Alabama. I'm in Nashville, Tennessee. I think Joe is in California, and my sister's in Jacksonville, Florida. All of those are sovereign territory of the United States of America. Those are states. Like it or not, that's where we live. And we have to be able to identify how we're going to maintain and sustain ourselves and do what's best for us, despite what we don't like about. There are a lot of things that I personally think shouldn't be, and I can't control those things, though. But I take what you're saying, my friend. I want you to understand.
Dr. Can I suggest this?
Yes, go ahead.
When we decide that we don't want to be a part of the Greek-Roman culture and we understand the true culture that we came from,
yes, sir.
That's how you break it up.
Okay.
Well, you know, my father said something to me real bold, Mr. Doc. You know what he said? Men are thought, females are energy. So when the brothers in the thought process, we agree that we are not part of that Greek-Roman culture. You know what I'm saying? Right. And we are true men that we are and manifest that true manhood in our community that'll break up that Greek-Roman-style government and its perverted-type society. When we brothers get together, or us brothers get together, we and us.
Hey, I see where you're coming from. I subscribe to what the framer said. That we hold certain truths itself that all men are created equal and endowed by the Creator with certain rights, done to establish among themselves a governance. And nobody has the right to take that away from you. So, hey, man, do you. Do you? Do you? We were talking about ladies, and I want 72, if she would like to weigh in on that. And I want to be very clear to my listening audience that it's not my intention to demonize women in any way, and even making reference to the feminist movement. But if we're intellectually honest, we see that there has been a direct correlation to the breakdown of relationships with men, particularly Afro men. And now in 2022, young people are running the streets, and they are a terror in neighborhoods and communities where black folk live. So let me yield the floor to you, 3072, if you'd like to respond to that.
What was your question?
Do you have a comment on the matter of I was talking about Patrick Daniel Moynihan and how government policies were geared in such a way that whether it was by intent or by default, they broke up the family. And this was well documented by McAdoo and Billingsley in there, The Black Families in America. They wrote it back in 1970. Did you want to comment on that?
Just from what I observed with the government policies in place back in the 60s and the 70s even, and even today, women are, and thank God for help, but it's easier for women to receive help and assistance than it is for men. And it's easier for a fatherless or husbandless home to receive assistance than it is for just a couple, it seems like. You got to be either living in the projects, and God, the middle class and the lower middle class, I think, really gets it hard. Sure. So it's like they're trying to get up on their second leg, but how? They just need a boost. But because they're not on their knees, it's like there's no help almost.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah, I could see that. And I've witnessed a lot of instances where men had to just lay dormant in the background just in order for the family to try to get some governmental assistance or help.
What effect do you think when the father, the progenitor, the father and the mother played this little game to receive assistance from the government? What effect does that have, 66, do you think, on young people, particularly males and little girls who are watching that, where for whatever reason, father tips out and moms play like the blind, crippling, crazy? Do you think that become an efficacy for them or a model for them? 6606? Joe, I'm sorry.
That depends upon how the mother and father handle it. The mother and father say to the kids, we're receiving welfare, but it's only meant to be temporary. And in 3 months from now, I am going to get a job as a self-sufficient, responsible human being. And this is what you should do, kids. When you get older, then fine. But if a mother and father who choose to continue to be on welfare, that's not the government's fault. There's a difference between correlation and causation.
One second. Let him finish, then we'll have a dialogue. Go ahead, 6-6, finish up there.
There's a difference between correlation and causation. The real cause, now that we're talking about it, is the lack of stigma that was attached to having children out of wedlock back in the 50s and 60s. When I was growing up, if anybody in the family got pregnant, that woman, the girl, was ostracized and or sent to live with an aunt, quote, unquote, until she had the child.
I see.
People have choices. They can either get pregnant or not.
Doctor,
pregnant.
Can I respond to
this? Hold on. Don't lose your thought, Don. 72 was going to respond to him, and then we'll come right to you. Go ahead. Don't lose your thought, Don. Go ahead, 72. You had a response to Joe.
Well, I was just saying, he mentioned welfare. Mm-hmm. What exactly is welfare? Who's eligible for welfare? Donald Trump received welfare. Some of the government employees receive. I mean, what is welfare? In this country, that's how everybody is able to make it. they receive welfare. Now, there's different forms and types of welfare. There's food stamps. There's medical assistance welfare. There's health care welfare. A lot of elderly people get that. And then, like you were saying, stigmatizing things. I think that's part of the problem, too. So, and it could be that maybe both parents work and they still need help. That's what I mean by the lower class, middle class people. They work every day. They're working overtime. And they still can't bring their two ends together the way they need to.
Gotcha.
I don't think that's nothing for them to feel ashamed of, and it certainly is nothing for them to feel ashamed to go and try to ask for more for help, more than what they can do for themselves. But it seems like, you know, they got too much according to the government. So, no, there's no help for you. You have to fit this certain low level guideline in order to, you know, do anything, which makes people dishonest. And that's another problem that leads, you know, I don't know. So it's a mess.
I got it for you but let me go to Don. But I do have a question for you.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Don.
I was born out of wedlock. My father was Dr. King's strategist. He was not there. But I'm going to tell you, listen up. I'm glad I was born out of wedlock. Do you know why? My mama's oldest brother taught me to break ground. My mama's oldest brother taught me to disc ground. My mama's oldest brother taught me to fertilize. My mama's oldest brother and his son taught me to cultivate. It wasn't my biological father. It was my mama's oldest brother, and my grandfather and them working on the farm taught me manhood. So I'm glad I was born out of
You didn't
stigmatize me. You strengthened.
I see. But now, Don, I got a question for you, too, but hold tight. Let me come back to 72. 72.
Yeah. Right?
At what point does an individual receiving help from someone else, be their brother, their sister, or the government, at what point do they pull from that help? At what point? Pull away. From that help. Say, I don't want it no more.
At what point when they start to get up on their feet?
I guess that's what I'm asking.
For instance, if you didn't have a home and now you have a home, then you should be pulling away. You should be giving somebody else room to get in your space to get help and get them a home.
How long does it take for you to... Do you set a goal to get a home in 5 years, 2 years, 3 years? And if you don't get it in that time, do you just say, I'm going to get out of the way because maybe it's me. I mean, you understand what I'm asking you?
Yeah, I do. Because I set a goal for myself. I moved here to a new state, and I set a goal for myself. Within the first 3 years of me being here, I no longer need to be renting. And thank God, bless him, I was able to do that.
Okay.
So, you have to be realistic in your goal setting. And, yes, if you have not reached the goal that you set, then you need to be reevaluating yourself.
I see. Okay. Got it. Okay. Yeah. All right. Good point. Okay.
Yeah.
And
another form of welfare is student loans.
Yeah. I'm a guilty of
it. Isn't that welfare? You didn't pay for that all by yourself.
Hey, listen. And you stepping on my toes now, because I was a welfare baby, and I had some student. I'm paying off
student loans,
working hard. Student loans,
You got doctors and lawyers.
Student loans
you got doctors and lawyers
welfare.
Had to get that.
Hold on,
they're worse than welfare. They got to pay that back.
I know you're killing me.
That destroys.
Look, you're killing me, man.
Still a form of welfare.
Hey, 66, they're killing me, man. They're killing me, man. But we're working on it because I want to pay that back. And guess what, 66? Fortunately for me, my children, when they, during their college experience, they were determined not to get loans. Now, they got scholarships and what have you. And the other part, my daughter, she worked. She was determined to work so she wouldn't get – I'm like, man, baby – No, Danny, So I'm with you, man. They could be a noose around your neck at times. But I'm glad they were
well,
there.
Well, you can always define anything as welfare, but something that's given to another person without having worked for it. Grants can be considered welfare. Scholarships can be considered welfare.
Yep.
But
yep.
the thing is that a person has, if they're going to take money from another entity, they should do it with the intention of furthering themselves, getting off that particular piece, and becoming self-sufficient. Now, if they don't do that, I'm not going to blame the organization that gives out the money. I'm blaming the people who take it and don't get off it.
Point well taken. I mean, you know, and it's not about some quick get rich quick scheme, you see, but it takes determination, focus, purpose, right? Because you got to have the end goal has to be, I'm going to be independent of this, and I'll be able to pay it forward for somebody else at some point.
And that's where the parents are extremely important, because if you grow up without parents giving you a sense of confidence and identity, then when you're 18 and 19 and you have to fend for yourself, you're not going to know how.
Right.
So you're going to just be buffeted around by the wind of circumstance.
Sure.
Parents are extremely essential to the growing up of children to become mature, responsible, and self-confident adults. Without good parents, generally you don't have good children.
Wow. Let me say something. I'm going to talk straight here tonight, because that's what we do here at 3072. Young girls and boys have to be taught that the Creator made you with the capability of procreating life. And they need to be taught to understand that natural aspect of their bodies, so they don't put themselves in a predicament where they have to assume the responsibility of a parent and their parenting. Are you with me? And you said this earlier, 3072, that you have to make up in your mind, because children can't wait on you to do the right thing. They're going to grow and have needs. Brother, we do the right thing by and for them or not. They're going to have those needs. Now, if you're just not ready to be a parent, then I understand that. Don't do that. You understand? You know, my daughter, I said to her, you know, I don't want you to get caught up with no knucklehead just to get married. And find you somebody that, you know what I mean, that I won't have to come after with my shotgun. You understand what I'm saying, 66. You know what I'm saying.
Sure. I mean, I have a 25-year-old daughter who is undecided if she wants children or not.
Well,
I respect that wholeheartedly. At least she's thinking about it.
Okay, I see.
Bringing children into the world.
Well, that's true too. I want some crumb snatchers. I wanted to have some, but I understand the importance of, as you said, be thoughtful about that, right?
That's right.
And making sure. I'm afraid, though, guys, that the way things are going, our young brothers are not prepared well. I mean, there's not a good stock to pull from. I'm concerned about that. That don't make them bad people. And some of them, I believe, I can't get away with this, but if I could, I would grab a UPS truck, and I'd drive around urban America, and I'd take them off to the wilderness. And then I'd ask them when I get through with them, how do you feel? We came out the wilderness. My God, I didn't come to preach, but I felt my help right there, Don. See what I'm saying, Don? Some of them need to go through the wilderness and have the experience that my friend JC had in the wilderness. And when they come out, they'll be ready to be men, to be fathers, to be purveyors of life. Don, are you with me?
Yeah, Mr.
Don,
Dockery,
are you with me?
Yeah, I'm with you. Mr. Dockery, I'm sorry. I got a friend who's sitting with me. I'm going to tell you who Freddie's sitting with. I'm going to tell you who Freddie is. Freddie's been to Minnesota, and he's from Selma. And he left from here because he did like I did. He got tired of the good old boy network here in Selma, just like I got tired up here in Tennessee, and I went into the Navy. Freddie went up north, and guess what? He hung out with Prince Nilman. He's a bass player. So he sent with me tonight, and he said, listen, what happened to him a while ago? He went out the front door. I'm at my friend's car dealership, and my friend got four roosters. No, he got, yeah, he got four white roosters and two red ones. So he went out the door a while ago. He said, man, I didn't know they were going to attack you.
Well,
I said, yeah, they'll whoop you, man. Oh,
well,
man. That's when we sat here laughing. He said, man, I didn't know they were going to whoop me like that. I said, yeah, they'll whoop you.
Well, Don, you got to live right or the rooster's going to come get you.
Oh, boy.
Don, as we wrap up our conversation for tonight, by the way, you're listening to Talk Straight. We still got about 20 minutes here. 657-383-0944. You want to give us a holler? Shout out. Come on, give us a call here. We still got a few minutes. We're talking from the top of the importance of education for urban youth. And if I can't reiterate anything else tonight, it would be the vital importance for us as parents, right, to be the primary voice of instruction for our children first and making sure that they have certain values. But, Don, we've done a lot of talk, and I was hearing what you were saying about some of the external distractions and barriers. You understand what I'm saying? That's in the popular culture today that are interfering with these things.
I'm going to be very honest with you and the listening audience there. I'm here in Selma. You know Kamala Harris just left. And the community was very – they didn't come. A bunch of them didn't come out because they know that's the usual play here in Selma. You know, politicians come, they march across the bridge, but nothing's done economically for the community. So a lot of them didn't show up. Only ones that showed up was the ones that brought their crowd here. And I was listening to them talk, and they know it's a game. You know what I'm saying? So Kamala Harris and Obama and them, it's, the people know it's a game. Selma,
well,
you know, we've been, you know, they don't want, we don't want one bank in Selma. Not one. Not one, Mr. Dockery. And the other sad part about it, you up there in Tennessee, Mike Eubanks up there, right up there in Dixon County, right outside to Davidson County, he's got all them dump trucks and don't know brother. If you don't know it or not, Mr. Dockery, don't no brother drive none of those dump trucks. It's about 300 dump trucks outside of Nashville that's paving state and federal roads. There's no brother in the truck.
I got you. Well, let me say this, Don, and maybe this is good news. You know, I do insurance, and I wrote a commercial policy for a young man that was under 30. And, Don, he has a fleet of trucks.
Wow.
I was proud to do it, man. You understand what I'm saying, Don? And, you know, and the young brother came to make sure all of his ducks were in order. He made sure they were properly insured, because if something happened, that could be the end of him and his business. What I'm saying is, despite those things done that have happened in the past, there are some – oftentimes we don't hear about these good things. The news ain't going to say that. You understand what I'm saying? That's why I'm spotlighting the brother. Now, I'm not going to give his name, but I'm spotlighting, I'm proud of him. I was so proud to sit there and take that brother's information and make sure he was taken care of with his commercial policy, his business policy. Because the brother is taking under 30. Did I say he was under 30? Did I say that? Proud of him, man. I'm just saying that it's not the case that nobody, big brother, is taking advantage of these lessons. And that's one of the things that you and I can do. We can patiently and calmly make sure that more of our young people understand the importance of these things. You see what I'm saying, Don?
Yeah.
Go ahead, 7-2. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I say I like the way you pubbed out there that, hey, you not only do life insurance, you guys have commercial.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we do commercial, too. Yeah, that's right. No, but, I really wanted to spotlight the fact that I was hearing what Don was saying about these guys having trucks and what have you. You don't hear the many, many cases because they're too busy working, living their life, and making their money to be going out trying to make the news come pay attention to them.
Right.
Now, the news catching me if they ran off the road and tow something up, that'd be a news story.
Yeah.
Huh? But they don't spotlight this young man that's not even 30 yet who handling his business. I'm like, come on, little brother. Come on, man. Come on with that. Come on with that, little brother. So There you go. There you go. Let me stop. I'm starting to get. I feel my help right now. I feel my help now. But yes. Suggest something to our listening audience, if you can. I don't want to put you on spot, 72. That we can take away from this discussion about. See, I define education as just being the process.
Sure.
Teaching, right? That people learn. What is it? Suggest something in the process that we can improve to ensure that our babies get everything they need, 72.
So if I was talking to the babies that was on a life journey venture, meaning trying to get their life in order, I would suggest being educated fully in what you're trying to do, what it's going to take to do it, what it's going to take to secure it, and what it's going to take, in, like you said, in the event that some catastrophe happened, you need to be fully equipped. So educate yourself fully.
That's it. Wow. Wow, wow. Don, you there?
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
So one of the things that happens for my people a lot of times, Don, we have good business ideas, but we don't put them on paper too well because the paper is a ruler that allows us to measure how successful we are. If it's one thing, Don, in the educational process, you would recommend that we make it more productive useful for young folks, what would that be tonight?
It began at the theological house too, Mr. Dockery, where we are being educated right now. Like at Selma University, it's the foundation of the Baptist organization. And I'm going to say something, Mr. Dockery. I own the YouTube right now. I think Howard University said they had in their 60th year of African studies. Well, Selma University didn't have its first year of African studies.
You
see what I'm saying? So it begins our leadership that's modeling before our young folk in the theological. And then, I love my prophet Noble Drew Ali when he said, Christ brought the temple of perfected man. And then he said, return the church and Christianity back to the European nations. When he hit me with that, Mr. Dockery, I'm stuck. I'm watching my leadership now. And I just hope my leadership would come up to what the prophet Noble Drew Ali, you know what I'm saying? They lagging, and the Europeans know they lag, and they play up on us on that. And I just wish we'd grow up a little bit more.
There are times, Don, where we have to take lead. If there's nobody else, we have to take lead ourselves. No opportunity, we have to take one for ourselves. And that gets lonely. That gets lonely. St. Louis is joining us late. St. Louis, we got about 10 minutes. We've been talking about the importance of education for urban youth. A very, very stirring conversation. A caller from California called in and joined us there. I thoroughly enjoyed his comments there. And 3072 here from Jacksonville and Brother Don out of Selma. But just right quickly, St. Louis, is there anything you want to add before we wrap up our discussion tonight?
Well, I had to attend a National Society of Black Engineers Zoom call.
Oh, okay. Yes, sir.
And,
yes, sir.
It was a lot of engineers and civil engineers, architecture, chemical engineers. Structure engineering companies, Avner, they're all black. And I really enjoyed the conversation and added to it. But no, you got to educate these young people in these demanding fields. You have to see what they have a knack for, start them off young, expose them to different resources so that they can express with their own innovation what skills that they innerly have.
Wow.
Give them science kits, electrical, electronic kits, chemistry kits, mechanical kits, and
all sorts of things.
That's the way you expose them and get them going.
Okay. Well, that's a good look. You said that I mentioned you, my son was a member there. He is now the treasurer for the Cleveland chapter of NSBE there. So I don't know if he was on that call tonight, but
no, this was for the St. Louis chapter.
Oh,
so your son
is
probably down there in Memphis, in Tennessee.
No, in
so he's
Cleveland.
Probably in one
no,
of those.
No, he's in Cleveland.
We're in
Ohio.
The same area.
Huh? Cleveland, Ohio. He's in the Cleveland, Ohio.
Yeah, area. That's the same. He's in Area 5.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you know, we're going to get there. It don't seem like it sometimes, guys, but it looked like we take one step forward and we two steps back. But we're going to get there now. Listen.
And, you know, like I told a guy the other day, he asked me, he was talking about Black history. And I said, well, I am Black history.
What do you mean by that, St. Louis?
I tell them, I take kids around the area and show them buildings and bridges that I erected. I am the history. They got to go back in the 1800s and stuff like that, which they don't relate to. Relate to what's going on today, whereas it's relevant to them. Not no Frederick Douglass and all this stuff. That's behind.
Wait a minute now. Wait, no.
I am the history. Yeah.
Well, you know what, though, St. Louis? I appreciate what you're saying because...
And you are, too. I mean, show things what's going on, relevant.
Absolutely. No, I agree with that. Yeah. I agree with that. 25, 50 years from now, when you and I are gone, young people will be able to remember your name and talk about how you constructed those bridges and how you know, you understand what I'm saying?
They can say, my papa done that right there.
Well, not just their papa. They can say, Mr. Pianchi done that. Or, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
However it is, but you're right. Every event in life is a teachable moment, and it's a history building moment. You know, we're in the present. We're in the present, but what we do today will be a building block for tomorrow for somebody. We're hopefully we're doing something productive there. But man,
there
okay,
you go.
All right. Yes, sir.
All right.
Well,
thank you very much.
Yes, I'm sorry we missed you there. But okay, well, a final thought there, 72, and then we'll get out of here.
Just enjoyed the talk tonight. That's about it.
Yes. You know what? I enjoy you.
Oh,
I enjoy you. That's what I enjoy. No, we appreciate it. I hope that as we move forward, we can continue to maintain the dialogue and so forth and so on. Pastor Waller been very busy out there in them streets, so I know he's probably tired today because he's been working hard and doing some things. But we thank you for joining us here. And with that, we're going to go ahead and prepare to end. You've been listening to Talk Straight. Our topic tonight was the importance of education for urban youth. Some people may say, why just urban? Not just urban, but tonight we're talking about urban youth. There is a special set of circumstances, barriers, and needs for this subgroup or population in America. And I, if nobody else, want to focus on making sure we keep that at the forefront. But we're talking about this urban American youth, and we're talking about how we can educate them in a way that they're empowered to do for themselves, and no one else has to do it for them. Listen to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Docker. Grateful for each and every one of you joining us. And what we're going to do is we're going to look forward to coming back next Tuesday. Donny Hathaway said it like this: to be young, gifted, and black. That is a fact. We'll see you next Tuesday, 7 o'clock p.m. for another episode of Talk Straight. Don't you
Is it for my world? A million